It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the Exterior Home Solutions VolQuest podcast, local and trusted since 1999. Our friends Exterior Home Solutions can help you if you have a need for roofing, siding, repairs, all that and more. Pick up the phone, give them a call today for a free estimate. That number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We got Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, Grant Ramey, I'm Eric Kane, and we got a lot happening right now at VolQuest.com. Tons of recruiting stuff on the sites now and throughout the rest of the week. We got Tennessee about to make its run to the NCAA tournament, which we'll talk about here in a moment. Baseball season's going on right now, and spring football practice has begun. There is so much going on, Brent Hubbs, right now, and if people are listening, they're truly, and not a member of our site, they're missing out. They can join up right now for a great deal over at VolQuest.com.
Yeah, tons of stuff going on. I mean, it's a busy time of year. We got a ton of recruits in town. Really starting this week, I'm going to be in town all month long as a part of spring practice. Basketball is getting ready to try to make their run, as you mentioned. Baseball is just getting started. Crazy. Nobody won a road series in the SEC in week one, which is just – that tells you what the depth of this league is going to be like and how much of a grind this league is going to be. We're going to cover all that for you. Of course, great conversation about it all at VolQuest. So it is a great time to check us out. Plenty of things happening.
Let's go ahead and start that conversation right now with Tennessee basketball. Selection Sunday's in the rearview mirror. Grant, Rob, we know what lies ahead for Tennessee basketball. It is a number two seed in the Midwest. It'll get going on Thursday night, the late one. I know you guys are excited about that one. I don't think anybody's excited about that one. 9:20 Eastern time, which means about 10 o'clock start time. St. Peter's, the 2 versus the 15. Tennessee was the top overall number two seed, Rob. And this is what lies in front of Tennessee. What do you think of the draw and the seed line and the region and all that?
I mean, I think it's pretty – I don't think Tennessee has any qualms. I mean, when you got bounced, you know, like they did from Mississippi State, by Mississippi State on Friday, I thought it made it pretty easy, you know, for the committee to – decide they were the odd man out in the you know, the battle for that one seed that was up for grabs. I just, as far as the region goes, I mean, you've already seen Purdue. I mean, if you make it there, I mean, you lost the game, but you weren't overwhelmed. I mean, you know what you're getting into. And also, I mean, you're 4 months removed from, you know, Zakai Ziegler, you know, being even further back from his torn ACL than when you played Purdue that first time. You know, I think Creighton's a good team if that matchup ends up happening. Texas, they've been all over the place. And, you know, I'm not even sure they would win in whoever comes out of that play-in game. So, to me, I don't think it's an awful bracket for Tennessee at all. I mean, if Purdue's the quote-unquote big bad, you know, that's lurking in the Elite Eight, then that's a challenge you've already taken the measure of. So, I don't think it's an awful bracket for Tennessee at all.
And I think if you get to the Elite Eight, it's house money, because that's where you're trying to get back to. That's where you've been trying to get back to for whatever it's been now, 14 years. And St. Peter's is St. Peter's in kind of name only compared to what they were in 2022, a different head coach. Shaheen Holloway's at Seton Hall right now. I think they have one guy on roster that was part of that 2022 team, and he didn't really play much on that team. He was kind of deeper on the bench. So I think that gets your attention a little bit because of what they did. And they were a 15 seed last time, and they went to the Elite Eight, and they went through a 2 seed in Kentucky and a 7 and a 3 in Purdue, and finally lost to an 8 of all people in North Carolina in the Elite Eight. So I think that gets your attention a little bit. There's a storyline there with Zakai Ziegler playing his half-brother, Armoni Ziegler, the 6'4 freshman guard, although he didn't play a ton in their conference tournament. And I think everybody looks at Texas and that rematch and the Rick stuff and that storyline for round two. But usually when you start looking at those storylines and trying to figure out what's going to happen, the bracket falls a completely different way and something else happens that you're not expecting and whatever. So we'll see who's there. But I think in terms of Tennessee wanted to go to Charlotte, they got Charlotte. You missed UConn. That's pretty good. You didn't get sent out west. That's pretty good. Houston's pretty tough, too, if you had to go to the south region. So all things considered, Creighton's the pivot point. If you get to Creighton in the Sweet 16, they got a good big man. They got good guards. That can be bad news for Tennessee matchup wise. But you're going to have to get there, and you're going to have to find a way to exercise that demon and get back to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2010.
Hey, I want to ask both of you guys this for the next 30 minutes, will y'all explain how the committee goes about seating and what's important and what's not important and how those things work? Can you explain to me why the perceived number one, two seed is in the bracket that they're in? Although I don't think Purdue's the number one overall seed, the tournament, in my opinion, in Western play. I mean, I don't, they may be the fourth number one seed out there. So I'm just, you know, Auburn, I mean, I don't know what counts anymore. Does anybody know what counts in terms of seeding? I mean, do either one of you have Grant, any idea what seeding looks like?
I mean, clearly the SEC tournament doesn't matter. I mean, based off what two of the last 3 years, what we saw from Tennessee and Auburn, I mean, I think Auburn has a legitimate gripe, you know, getting sent out to Spokane, Washington after winning three games in 3 days as the four seed in the league. So, and, you know, we saw what happened with Tennessee after they won in Tampa a few years ago. They really seemed to get a bump. So, there were a lot of weird ones. I mean, ones that I guess the anomaly that really jumped out to me, and I don't know what kind of nerdy stats the rest of y'all latched onto, but the 11 seed line was the one that jumped out to me. I saw some graphics where New Mexico had was like 26 in the net, and they were an 11 seed. And then who else did you have, Grant? I can't remember who the other ones were, but they were all 60 plus, you know, in the net.
The insane one was Duquesne, who was a big
80 in the net.
In the 80s in the net, and you got James Madison, who's 30-3, and not a team that I would want to get matched up with as a 12 seed. Like that looks like they had the bracket done and they just started filling in bid stealers on the 11 seed line for whatever reason. In terms of what Hubs was talking about, now I always thought it was more geography based than like a snake draft in terms of where the seeds go. Now, UConn's the number one overall seed. I think maybe Houston might have been number two, and then Purdue, or maybe Purdue and Houston were pretty interchangeable. I'm no Bruce Pearl apologist, and I'm not trying to channel my inner Stephen Pearl, but to win three games in 3 days in Nashville and then get sent to Spokane, and it's bad enough you're going to Spokane, but it's also a Thursday game. It's not even a Friday-Sunday regional. It's a Thursday-Saturday regional, and Alabama got sent out there too. I mean, you look at Auburn, if they win in the first round and San Diego State wins in the first round, then you're playing basically a road game in round two against a higher seeded team. So it's crazy. And then if you do advance to the Sweet 16, you're going all the way back to Boston to play UConn, the number one overall seed. So this year, out of maybe more so than the past previous handful of years, whatever, that I've been paying attention to it, it feels like the committee was, I don't know, like the pickle race on Billy Madison, where they just threw the pickles up against the glass and saw which one won all the way down.
Well, the other thing too is you had the chairman of the committee basically acknowledged we were up till 2 a.m. Sunday morning putting the bracket together. Like, some stuff happened Sunday. I mean, like, how much movement is there really? This goes back to the question about whether or not you should be playing on Sunday. Or you should be playing on Sunday in your conference tournament. I mean, you had some, obviously they made some adjustments because some people lost bids because, you know, you had some conference tournaments steal some bids on Sunday. But, man, it just seems like you don't get a whole lot of credit for what happens on Sunday anymore because they want to get this thing put to bed before they go to bed is what it feels like.
And NC State's the other 11 seed. Like, that's a great story, winning five games in 5 days and Keats is about to be fired, and he wins it in a contract year. And in his contract, it says he gets a 2-year extension if he wins the ACC tournament. But for them to be an 11 seed, like, yeah, it feels like some teams, whatever you do Saturday night, it matters a ton. And then Sunday, it feels like that gets ignored because you don't see whatever happens on Sunday reflected in the bracket for sure.
Well, from an SEC perspective in the SEC tournament, I mean, I think we can all agree it really doesn't matter much, but the conference tournaments in general is just fun because you mentioned the story of NC State, which is a good one right now, but Long Beach State, they fired their coach, right? Was it Long Beach?
Yes.
Like, they fired their coach, and now they went on and won that tournament and got an automatic bid. I mean, they're going to play Arizona and lose, but I mean, it's really, really unique in the sport. I mean, it's fun, you know, from an outsider, but obviously, as you guys were going back, I mean, if you're a fan of Auburn, if you're a fan of Tennessee a couple years ago, and you go through and you win this tournament, I mean, it literally helps you out. It doesn't help you out at all.
No. I mean, it's a blitz. If you're there, if you're boots on the ground and you're a fan, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, the cities that they have them in, the, you know, the facilities, you know, it's a really good time. But yeah, there's, for the SEC anyway, there's not a lot of material evidence that it helps you. And I heard this stat yesterday, and I think this is right, but you're talking about what a crazy week. 32 conference tournaments, only 11 one seeds won them around the country.
So, and the A-10 had the top four seeds all lose, didn't even make it to the semifinals. I mean, that's how crazy it was.
So with that being the case, is that more of parity in the game? Is that more of coaches of the higher seeds not emphasizing the conference tournament as much as the big tournament, if you've already got your at-large bid secured? We know where John Calipari stands on that. So what do you make of that, one? And two, what do you make of Tennessee's early exit? Big deal, not big deal, washed, moved on, not a carryover. What do you make of all that?
I don't make a big deal out of the early exit just because of what we've seen the last 2 years. I mean, they entered the tournament in wildly different fashion, and there was no correlation without, you know, they came out of Tampa. They didn't just win the SEC tournament in Tampa. I mean, they were hot, you know, coming down the stretch that year. I mean, they were clicking on all cylinders, and they go in, they stumble, they lose to an 11-seeded Michigan, you know, in round two. Then last year, they don't have Zakai Ziegler. They lose Zakai literally the last week of February, go to the SEC tournament, lose on Friday to Missouri, and then, you know, make the Sweet 16 after beating Duke. So I just don't think there's a correlation to that. I mean, I think the clean slate thing is a real psychological deal, not just for Tennessee, but for everybody who, you know, isn't going to the tournament with momentum. And, you know, I think this team in general has been pretty good about bouncing back after a poor performance.
I think it's a big deal if at halftime Thursday night Tennessee's 5 for 27 from the field or whatever they were against Mississippi State and kind of how they started off against Kentucky as well on senior day. If that continues, then yeah, it becomes a big deal. But that's just not been the team that we've seen consistently. I mean, they've been an offensive team, an improved offensive team, I guess, compared to years past, consistently through the season, and the number of times and they've scored 80 plus and what they've averaged, and you know, having Dalton connect and having Jonas Adu being a lot better offensively than he's been in the past, and Zakai back, and you know, whatever, all these other guys you add. And so I think it's a concern if you get to halftime and you're struggling and suddenly that arena flips on you and there's a lot of people in there rooting for the number 15 seed to pull off the upset and to go on another Cinderella run. And I mean, conference tournament wise, I think it's still a big deal for Tennessee. Tennessee wants to win games the SEC tournament. I mean, Cal can say that they only worry about the NCAA tournament, and that's fine. But I think, Bruce Pearl's tearing up on the sideline yesterday when they win a SEC championship. So I think it still means something. I think parity wise, there's a little bit more parity because of the transfer portal, and it's just easier to. It's another option for everybody to build better depth, and the leagues can be deeper. And there's a little bit more parity there. I think that's how I look at it, opposed to the higher seeds just not taking it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it meant something for Rick Barnes when they won it a couple of years ago. I mean, he spoke on that. You saw the video and the pictures of him, like the team celebrating. He was kind of off to the side, just kind of taking it all in. So, I mean, I would agree that it still means something for them, but it just doesn't mean a dang thing for the selection committee.
I think it means something if you win. I think if you lose, you got a built-in – deal that it's not a big deal. It's a conference tournament. Our focus is on the big tournament. I think is where it's going. Rob, are you more? What do you need to see more out of Tennessee in the opening round to get more comfortable with Tennessee potentially making a run? Is it the return of the offense, or is it Tennessee getting back kind of gritty on defense and defending better, lowering the opponent's shooting percentage? Which is a bigger thing for you?
Offense for me. I mean, I just don't worry about the defense that much. I mean, they were bad against Mississippi State, but that's, you know, just historically, traditionally, it's such a strong suit for these guys that I don't worry about it. Whereas on the flip side, historically, traditionally, you know, scoring, coming up in points, avoiding dry spells can be a real issue for these guys. So, you know, let's get away from the stand around and watch Dalton mode. God, come on, you know, get something from Josiah and Santi, not even double digits, but something. I mean, those guys can't, you know, not hit a shot in an NCAA tournament game. And, you know, Dalton's got to be good. But I thought Mississippi State did a really good job of forcing the ball out of his hands. I'm not sure everybody, you know, is going to – not everybody, but a lot of people are going to be athletic enough, long enough to do that. And went and, you know, they sold out a lot. Tennessee's got to have guys step up and make shots. They don't have to be great. But, you know, they've got to get something from some other people. And you know, they're going to see a physical big – you know, down the road, if they hang around very long, and Jonas, when that happens, has got to, you know, perform better than he has the two times out against Tolu Smith.
Yes, I know this is where you get in trouble when you look at your bracket. We all do it. You know, fill out a bracket every single year and then just kind of project, you know, where this team's going to go, who's going to be in this matchup in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and all that. But when you're looking at the path, the perceived path for Tennessee, you get by St. Peter's. You mentioned Creighton in the Sweet 16, of course, Purdue. Do either one of you guys, and I'm putting you on the spot here and I apologize, but either one of you guys know much about Texas this year? What can Texas bring if that is who Tennessee squares off with in the round of 32?
I mean, Grant, you might know from a personnel standpoint, I don't know a ton about Texas. I know that they have been wildly up and down in a really tough Big 12. And I think, at least from the outside looking in, my perception is they've won, you know, most of the games at home that they were supposed to win and really haven't, you know, raise their level of play and won, you know, won something that they're, you know, that you'd be calling an upset.
I think they started 11-2 and they went 9-9 over their final 18 regular season games. So there's talent there on the roster, and Rodney Terry's not a bad basketball coach. He knows what he's doing, but at the same time, they're 61st, I think, defensively in KenPom. I think they're 19 offensively. So, up and down, obviously it would be a huge storyline kind of game and all the dramatics that go with it. But I think Tennessee's the best team in that 4-team pod that they're starting out with the first weekend. I guess a 5-team pod when you count the first four games and trying to figure out who the 10 seed's going to be. And they got to get out of that, and they got to get to Detroit and get to Creighton or whoever it is and try to get past it.
Is it good for this team that they had a way, I mean, that they had a wake up call? Does that make this, how much easier does it make it for Rick Barnes and Zakai Ziegler to have everyone's attention that they experienced, boom, it's over, right? Like we didn't need to stay the night in Nashville. How big of a deal is it for this team to experience that before they get going in this deal?
Like we just said, we've seen both ways, and it didn't seem to matter whether they went in hot or went in off a loss. But for my personal preference, I would like to go in smoking hot, you know, like UConn is. But I think there's also benefit, and Rick used it. He talked about it, you know, in the locker room the other day. He's like, hey, guys, remember how you feel right now. Soak it in, because if you feel like this again, your season's over. So, you know, take this one to heart. So, I mean, I think there could be some benefit from that for sure.
I think the benefit is they got to get back to being desperate. And we haven't seen them be desperate since they went to South Carolina and they're trying to clinch that regular season SEC title, because they didn't really have, you know, you want to beat Kentucky on senior day because it's Kentucky and you want to go out with a win and you want to cut nets down and go through all that stuff post game. But they didn't play all that well. They didn't defend all that well. And they went to Nashville. For me, it's the way Mississippi State beat them. I mean, Mississippi State pushed them around, drove at them, attacked them, suffocated Dalton, took other guys out of the game. So it's the way that humbling loss kind of happened. And they never led in that game. They're down 23 in the second half. I mean, they got hammered. If that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what's going to wake you up this time of year. So, yeah, there's definitely benefits of winning 12 of 13 in the SEC tournament, whatever it was like in 2022. But it can also be a drawback if you go to the second round thinking you're going to waltz and Michigan shows up as an 11 seed and beats you. So there's benefits to both sides of it, I guess. But for me, it's the way they lost that I think has to open their eyes and kind of reset a little bit heading into this tournament.
Last thing I got on the basketball front, and I'm not expecting you guys to, you know, call your shot. Tournament basketball is impossible to predict, but what are your thoughts on Tennessee? I'll leave it kind of open-ended. What are your thoughts on Tennessee as they begin this journey? You see the bracket, you see the region, you see the path. You know the team better than anybody. Rob, kind of what is your thoughts on Tennessee entering this this final stage of the season?
I mean, I think if they don't make the Elite Eight, it's a disappointment with this seeding, with this team, with this roster. And you know, I think they have a legit shot to make the Final Four. I mean, you can never say it's, you know, a disappointment or you underachieved if you didn't make the Final Four. But I mean, to me, this the way they're built, because of Dalton, because of Zakai, the point guard play, it's the best shot they've had. And you know, I think if you don't make the Elite Eight, you know, I'm not saying it's because this tournament's crazy. I'm not saying you've just underachieved drastically, but I think fans can, you know, legit be disappointed if they're not playing for a Final Four bid.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's going to be, you know, it could be Creighton. It could very well be South Carolina. I mean, as tough as we've seen them, it could be that rubber match. That would be very, very interesting if that did happen that way. I kind of agree with Rob, though. It's going to be disappointing if you don't get to the Elite Eight, because you've been to the Sweet 16 a couple times with Rick. This is Rick's best team at Tennessee that I've seen. Personally, we saw how the 19 Sweet 16 game went. That was a possession here or there from going Tennessee's way. So it's hard to say you expect an Elite Eight, but what this team has done pretty consistently throughout the season, been one of the better teams, was a flirting with the number one seed up until, you know, championship week and the conference tournaments. If you're that kind of team, if you're that caliber, then you should be able to get to the Elite Eight. And they're going to have to win some tough games to get there, but they have the talent and they should be able to do it. But we'll see what happens.
Tennessee's NCAA tournament journey begins this week. The two-seeded Volunteers will take on the 15-seeded St. Peter's on Thursday in Charlotte at 9:20 Eastern time. We'll see if it starts on time. But, of course, no better place to follow along with all the Tennessee basketball coverage with Rob Lewis and Grant Ramey than right here at VolQuest.com. Hey, we're going to get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, but when we come back, Tennessee spring football practice, the highlights from day one, what we expect is the rest of the week, and of course the injury report, all that and more is coming up next. But first, a word from our friends, Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
As always, big thank you to our friends, Exterior Home Solution, for making this coverage possible. If you have a need, pick up the phone for a free estimate. You can call 865-524-5888 or, as always, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Day one of spring football practice is in the books. We got to get out there for about 20 minutes. Saw a glorious 7-8 minutes of stretching, and we are back. We are so back. Later today is the one time during the spring period that we get to see a little bit more, so excited to see about 45 minutes worth of practice. But overall, Brent Hubbs, Josh Heupel kind of set the tone, opened up spring practice. He spoke with us on Monday. I think we'll start with the injury report. We knew going into the day or going into spring practice that Brew McCoy, Peyton Lewis, Elijah Herring were going to be out, no contact. But there was a lot more kind of added to the list in terms of little to no contact at all and guys that are going to miss a lot of time this spring, guys like Nathan Laycock, Javonte Spraggins, Masai Reddick, Andre Kirik, Arian Carter, Christian Charles. And we knew some of those guys were going to be limited anyway. But I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of opportunities on the offensive line and the secondary all over the place, but a lot of opportunities for some young guys to step up and get a whole lot of work in.
Well, I think the big question is the guard competition and where does that guard competition go? What does it look like? We said going into spring that nobody was going to win a job at left guard, but now if you take a couple of guys out of that equation, with Spraggins being out, I mean, does Jackson Lampley stay over on the right side at right guard? And how much would that affect him in the competition at the left guard spot? Or do they flip him and do a bunch of different things there? I thought Sham Umaroff looked like a guy who's had a great off season. You know, physically looks better, looks the part better than he has since he's been here. Does that translate? I think you got to work Vice and Lang some at guard now, not just center, given the holes that you have and the bodies you're looking for there. So to me, out of all of those, because I wasn't sure where Christian Charles was going to be and how much he would factor into the secondary competition just because of his inability to stay healthy. But of all the injury stuff that's out there, to me, the one that the position that jumps out is that guard spot. with three offensive linemen out this spring. What does that guard competition look like? You know, for 15 days, you know, as you get ready for the summertime and then go into fall camp.
Yeah. I mean, Grant, correct me if I'm wrong here, if I'm missing anybody, but I mean, you take out, you know, Andre Kirik is not going to be in the factor this spring. It seems like, of course, Javonte Spraggins, Masai Redick at that guard spot, Jackson Lampley, as Brent just mentioned, you got Sham, you got Bison Lang, Max Anderson, William Satterwhite, Gage Ginther, some of these true freshmen. I mean, it's open season, and you know, Jackson Lampley is kind of the veteran in the group, and the staff knows kind of what he can do. But again, it, you know, Javonte Spraggins coming back and healthy, he's a starter. You know, Jackson Lampley, you kind of know who you got in that situation now. But when we talk about depth, could you look at last year? Mays missed some games. You know, Campbell missed some games. Ollie, you know, guys were beat up. You need some depth, and a lot of these young guys are gonna get every opportunity they possibly can this spring.
Yeah, I think there's a dividing line there, and what you just referenced is you know what you got out of so-and-so and so-and-so, and you don't know what you got out of this group of guys. And this time of year is all about figuring out what you've got out of those guys that you don't know what you got out of. And you're not going to answer those questions fully because it's spring and it's 15 practices and it's split squad stuff, and it's you know, it's not full go all the time. But you better start figuring out some of that depth and kind of where it falls in order, what it looks like, and trying to answer as many of those questions as you can, and no more important of a spot because of those names you mentioned and the multiple positions that Hubs is talking about you're trying to figure out is the offensive line. You got to have depth there. You better know what you're getting from some of these guys. You better be spending this time of year figuring out. Hubs, one thing going back to injuries, is Brew McCoy, like, kind of where is he? Like, I was impressed just to see him out there going through the warm-ups with his teammates, like the walkthrough stuff and, like, just being out there being part of it based on what we saw from him when he left the field in September.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to do anything, obviously, from a football standpoint. He's continued to do his own rehab through the medical staff at Tennessee. And, you know, I think Brew's going to be around as much as he can because that's a wide receiver group that's got some young bodies there, and he's trying to be a leader. And I think that he's going to be a part of some of that individual stuff like we saw on day one. And then he'll go off and do a bunch of rehab stuff that is going. But his rehab has gone extremely well to this point. No reason in taking a chance on him for anything this spring. I think Laycock missing spring is huge for him because he needed to show something. You kind of wonder where he's at, you know, long-term with Tennessee, with the competition that they've got there. When you throw in Matthews and you throw in Brazel, and I thought Staley, just from an athletic standpoint, looks like a slot receiver in this offense as much as anybody looks like a fit, right? I mean,
Brent, he got lucky with that number 14 jersey. Mike Matthews, I know we're talking the slot here. He was an 89. Some of these freshmen get the ugly numbers. He looked good playing the slot, especially wearing that low number.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought, you know, physically, he's a guy that we heard about, you know, for all the talk of Matthews and Chris Brazel. He's a guy that made some noise in bowl practice. Just looked like he, you know, he fit the part well. I don't think he's done anything to disappoint. I'm not anointing him anything by any means, but he looks like a slot receiver in this offense. So I think Laycock not going through spring is more of a detriment to Nathan Laycock than it is to the wide receiver group. I'm not trying to be mean, but I think Laycock needed the work more than the receivers needed Laycock to get the work, given their depth there. Whereas I think on the offensive line, the offensive line needs as many bodies as they can get out there at the guard spot to create depth and some competition. So it's a little bit of a different vibe from that standpoint with those two positions and guys kind of being, you know, banged up and beat up, if you will.
Kind of on that note on the offensive line, let's bump outside the tackle. You know, just the eye test. That's what a lot of these early practices are. You talked about Braylon Staley, how he just kind of popped a little bit in your eyes. How about Lance Hurd? From a physical makeup standpoint, he just looked like an offensive tackle. And like, I think a lot of this last year, the first couple of days of spring practice had to do with John Campbell wearing Jerome Carvin's 75 jersey. But like, my first look at Campbell last year was like, that's a guard. Lance Hurd's a tackle. He's tall, lengthy, huge. He's got good footwork. He was practicing on the left side. John Campbell was getting reps on the right side. Trevor Duncan was, of course, you know, a sophomore, a redshirt freshman now, making the move over. He was with those guys getting some work in, practicing pulling and kicking out. I was impressed just from the eye standpoint with Lance Hurd, and obviously that's a guy that Tennessee's going to be counting on this year.
I mean, you ought to be impressed, right, Rob? I mean, the guy was a five-star recruit, and he was a five-star recruit based on measurables as much as anything else, you know, and athletic ability at some camps. So he should look the part. I think the question is, what's his adjustment level like at Tennessee, and how quick does he jump in there? Because, Rob, you signed him to be the plug-and-play guy. I mean, like, he's your left tackle. I mean, I joke, you know, that Tennessee's gotten to the point that they're no longer handing out starting jobs when they hand out jersey numbers. That one's the exception as a transfer guy. I mean, they brought him in to be the left tackle. That's why John Campbell's on the other side.
Yeah, and he played. I mean, obviously, you know, didn't start, was behind some guys last year. He played 12 games at LSU, and he knows what it's like, to, you know, the physicality is like in the SEC. And you mentioned the measurables. And Tennessee, you know, has a strong track record. I don't know how they compare to everybody around the country, but I would imagine they rank pretty high in their percentage of hits out of the transfer portal. You know, guys that, you know, in many instances have been plug and play at, you know, both sides of the ball. So I think the staff does a great job with the evaluations, but not just how guys are going to fit, you know, in the scheme on the field, but culture wise as well for the most part. And that's a huge part of the transfer portal process.
We're going to see a lot more tomorrow. Again, we're going to get to see later today, nine periods of a practice. But I remember looking out there in Routes on Air one time, I saw Holden Say's catch one, and he just looked physically bigger than the tight ends that have been here in years past. You know, we'll look at him. On the defensive side, Grant, they were doing circuits and a lot of stuff. I didn't see as much from defense than offense in day one, but I do think it's a big opportunity for, obviously, the linebackers, new position coach. Keenan Peely will be limited a little bit this spring. Arian Carter's not going to get a whole lot of work in. Elijah Herring, not going to get any work in. So, again, opportunity. Young guys, you know, now veteran Caleb Perry and Jeremiah Tielander and Jalen Smith and some of these new guys. Edwin Spillman, who his first day on campus and with the team was yesterday. A lot of opportunity there. And, of course, in that secondary, brand new, fresh-looking secondary, Jacoby Thomas, Jermon McCoy, a couple of the newcomers that are, you know, going to play a role for that secondary this year, and it starts this week in spring practice.
I'll tell you what I saw on the defensive end. I was there for about 5 minutes Monday morning. I saw Rodney Gardner barking at people like it was, you know, the third Saturday in October. Like, he just rolls straight back into it. The light switch is either on or off. Yeah, and he was just getting after him. Arian Carter, not dressed, but he might have led the team in bouncing around and going through drills, and it looks like he was having more fun than just about anybody out there. But that was my only defensive takeaway is Rodney Gardner, consistent as the day is long. He is going to be barking at his players.
I'd tell you where the defense stood out to me, and this is no surprise, Rob and anybody else. I mean, when you bring back a group that you played about 13 guys last year in the defensive front, they should look the part. I mean, that's a group of men on the defensive line. We know Rodney's not going to let him have any days off or cut any corners, but James Pierce looks like he's added a few pounds. Joshua Joseph looks bigger than he's looked at any point in time since he's been here. They just have a lot of grown men on the defensive line, which if you're Tim Banks, Rob, you just got a lot to build on and a lot to build around if you're playing a bunch of grown men, you know, up front, because this is a grown man league.
I mean, I think it's probably been a really long time since you felt that good about, you know, your defensive front. What do you think? I mean, when you talk about the vets that you just rattled off, Omari Thomas, you know, in the interior, an electric talent, James Pierce on the outside, you know, Joseph has played a lot. Eason's played a ton. You know, Simmons, Weathersby's, you know, a guy that everybody's excited about after just getting a glimpse of him. Tyree West, Hobbs. I mean, there's a lot of names up there. A lot of not just bodies who have played, but guys that people are excited about. I mean, multiple, you know, NFL, you know, potential NFL dudes for the first time in a long time, which, you know, as you pointed out, Hubbard, I mean, it's a lot of scrimmage league. I mean, it's if you're going to win in this league, you better have multiple guys up there that are in your two deep that are going to play in the NFL someday.
Yeah, it should be why they're sleeping pretty well on that side of the ball. Now they've got questions they've got to answer in the secondary, and there's a lot of unknowns there, Eric. When you look at where they are, but you can build in the secondary if you can get to the quarterback up front. They should be able to up front, but this secondary competition is not going to end this spring. But it is going to be interesting to see how Thomas fits in, McCoy, you know, where's Boo Carter, you know, versus Jordan Thomas? What does that look like? Does that truly become a competition this summer? You know, what emerges from there in a stunning development? James Pearson, that video, having to go back and do something in a repeated drill. Rodney Gardner was smacking his cane after having his knee replacement against the trampoline there because he didn't do something exactly right. So much for being the number one pick in the NFL draft. You're not getting any cut any corners there. But my point is, in the secondary, there's bodies, but man, that's going to be fascinating to see how that side shakes out or how that group shakes out over a period of time. And it's a long, long way from getting any kind of semblance of shaking out.
Yeah. And I mean, for so long, Tennessee fans just wanted something different because you saw the same, at least at the safety position, you saw the same things over and over and over, and you just saw, you know, the limitations in that group at times. And I thought, you know, some of those guys, you know, finished their careers off much better, you know, Jalen McCullough, for instance. But nonetheless, it's brand new. Cornerback, star, safeties is brand new. And so kind of how does that develop? And it starts right now. I think, you know, Jacoby Thomas is the guy that, sure, it's, you know, from MTSU. You're not playing in the SEC, but he's a guy that's played a lot of football. And I put in the practice observation that he was, you know, one of the guys leading drills. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean anything, but, you know, he's a guy that thinks he's going to play. He came here to play for a reason. And I mean, he's played a whole lot of football, and Andre Turrentine probably thinks the same thing because he finished off last year as being a starter. And Jermall McCoy, a great freshman season coming over at cornerback, Ricky Gibson stepping up, and you know, Christian Harrison made the move to safety officially. That I saw that. Brent, did you get eyes on Christian Conyer? I did not. Was he with the safeties or the corners day one?
Corners. It looked like he was working with corners. And again, day one, we'll see. I mean, I don't think there was any other than the Christian Harrison move on defense and the move of flipping Duncan to the offensive line. I don't think there's anything, you know, any real position moves that are taking place, but we'll see how some stuff, you know, shakes it out, you know, as we go forward. And again, you got to be real careful. We don't want to go Paul Fortenberry, Woody Quinn on everybody for day one of spring practice with a guy, you know, with too many people who are anointed this or that, but again, this team continues each year to look more and more the part that you want them to look. And we'll see how they grow and evolve and develop. And that includes the quarterback. I mean, we've done 20 minutes here on Tennessee football and haven't mentioned Nico's name. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I thought he was sharp in day one, but it's a marathon, not a sprint, you know, as Josh Heupel pointed out. And we'll see how he grows and how everything moves forward with this football team as they continue to settle in to spring practice. Speaking of marathons and not sprints,
I was going to say that transition. I'm glad you did.
Let me ask you a couple questions here about Tony Vitello and the Tennessee baseball team. Not that it was a bad weekend, but you felt like you left at least one in Tuscaloosa, don't you think, in week one? And interesting, Tony Vitello basically saying post game on Sunday, like, we're looking for help, kind of help wanted, open audition, whatever. I was a little surprised to kind of see the direction that he kind of went after that game on Sunday publicly about, you know, hey, all hands on deck. We're open for anybody wanting to help us here.
Yeah, I mean, he's a competitor. He's Italian. He doesn't like to lose. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. And you know, a lot of people were, and rightfully so. I'm not saying it's wrong to complain about this. I mean, we saw what happened against Notre Dame and Supers a couple years ago. Did he and Frank Anderson leave Nate Snead in one batter too long? And I wrote about this in the 3-2-1 yesterday. It's easy to say absolutely they did. Why? Because Gage Miller took you over the fence for a 3-run home run. My question is, and Tony's question there, in my opinion, is who am I going to turn to? Who's going to step up? Who do I have confidence to hand this baseball over and say, go get me an out? Because right now, Tennessee's bullpen doesn't have that. With Nate Snead currently on the mound, struggling where he was, A.J. Causey in the bullpen, or in the rotation. Stamos had already pitched in that game. Aaron Combs looked shaky on Friday. Marcus Phillips looked shaky in his last go-about. Your two freshmen, Matthew Dallas and Derek Schaefer, has been erratic here of late. Kirby eventually came into the game, but you know, I love Kirby, but with all due respect, do you want Kirby in that situation? Maybe you do. I mean, I think that's kind of where Tony was, and his frustration was at the end of that game on Sunday. It was like, hey, we got spots to fill, and you know, people got to step up and take it because we're not sure what we have in certain roles in our bullpen right now. So I think it's frustrating. I mean, Saturday, you know, I wrote about this as well. Tennessee didn't quit. I thought Drew Beam had such a great bounce back effort, and I don't believe in moral victories, but man, Tennessee lost that game because Tennessee beat Tennessee. Base running mistakes, horrible defense from Christian Moore. Drew Beam couldn't find a third out in the first three innings. But Tennessee did battle back, and you know, if not for going 3 or 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position, you win that baseball game. So, yeah, I think Tennessee dropped Saturday in a game it could have won. It could have won on Sunday as well. It just back-to-back strikeouts there at the end, that was not great. Hitting with runners in scoring position and runners on third base with less than 2 outs was an issue all weekend long. So, again, marathon, not a sprint. It is things to work on. You're certainly not as good as you probably thought you were, but Tennessee's still a good baseball team, and I think Alabama's a pretty good baseball team as well. But I think frustrating weekend's kind of how I would summarize it, because you could have swept Alabama, but you certainly could have won the series. But Tennessee kind of beat Tennessee this weekend, in my opinion.
So let me ask you this. Is this a product of not playing a great non-conference schedule? I know they went and played in the Classic out in Texas, which had great competition out there. But after that, they were in more run rule games than they were ball games where it mattered, where you had to go to the bullpen and say, hey, here's the baseball. Get me out of this jam. Save the game for us here. They've not been in many of those situations. Is that a product of something that, you know, maybe they need to schedule a little more difficult in the non-conference leading up to conference? This is kind of how they've always done it. I get that. And again, this is one series on a long journey. But is some of this frustration from the fact that they got some guys who haven't been in those situations as well?
In my opinion, yes. And again, you're right. This is how Tony and Frank and Elander have all built this schedule since they've been here. This is kind of how they go about things. So it's not like it's anything new. But yeah, I mean, you're not in high leverage situations outside of the opening weekend. Kansas State, you thought would be one game where you had that, but Tennessee blew the brakes off them. I mean, there was a close game here or there, don't get me wrong, but I think in the future, if you schedule a little bit tougher in the non-conference, then you're putting yourself in some of these positions late in ball games to where you have to know who you have in a certain role and all that. And I mean, you're going to see better pitching, and you know, baseball, you got guys that can throw, you know, I think it was Eastern Kentucky had a lefty throwing 93 the other night. I mean, you can find good pitching anywhere, but I think a lot of that, you know, has to do with not seeing it routinely over the course of a weekend like you did against Alabama. But again, it's not the end of the world. It's just one weekend. I think Tennessee's biggest problem this weekend was Tennessee. But to your point, I do think that the non-conference scheduling could and should be better in the future, in my opinion, so that, you know, you're not just slapped in the face week one. Last year, you got swept at Missouri. This year, you played so much better, but you could have swept, but you lost the series. And I think a lot of that is because you didn't have routine practice kind of leading up to those situations.
And then the last thing for me on baseball was we saw A.J. Russell for just, two innings, two-plus innings. Where are they? Do they work him back as the Sunday guy because his fellow A.J. has been so good on Friday night that you're kind of not going to mess with that? Or what do you think they do moving forward as you look at what they have this week with Xavier coming to town and then Ole Miss for the weekend?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think right now everything stays kind of status quo. You know, A.J. Russell, he pitched 40 pitches the other day. They wanted to go 2, maybe 3 in a best-case scenario, but they're going to continue to be slow and stretch him out. And so I think until he's completely stretched out, you're not going to see a change. Now, if A.J. Causey continues to pitch as effectively as he has here of late, I don't see any reason why you want to change that. Say in 2 weeks when A.J. Russell's completely stretched out and A.J. Causey is still going, then I think you have a conversation of, well, do you want to bump Beam back to Sunday where he's, you know, where he's pitched the last 2 years and he's comfortable? Do you maybe want to move Russell back to Friday and Causey to Sunday? I don't think you'd see something that drastic, but I think that's kind of when the conversation is. So in the meantime, I think everything stays kind of where it is until A.J. Russell continues to get stretched out. But I still, as good as Causey's been, I still want to see him do it, you know, week after week in SEC play. And he's such a weapon Tennessee wanted in the bullpen. But as I wrote in the 3-2-1, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And right now, Tennessee has no reason to fix it. So We'll just continue to keep tabs on that as the week goes on. Tennessee will be back in action against Xavier later tonight. Ole Miss this weekend at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and we'll see if Tennessee can bounce back and get above 500 in the baseball SEC slate. A lot going on right now at VolQuest.com. Plenty of stuff you can read. Recruiting coverage from Matt Ray and Austin Price over there as well. Basketball beginning the NCAA tournament run. Baseball season going on right now. And, of course, spring football. All that and more is happening right now over at VolQuest.com and on the General Scorers. A big thank you to our friends Exterior Home Solutions for bringing us coverage of this podcast. If you have a need, give them a call today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888 or online at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. Local and trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. For Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, and Grant Ramey, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here on the VolQuest podcast. You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.